Hi, I'm Scott Leadingham. We're taking time this Veterans Day to look at stories of people around the Northwest who have served our country. In the next 16 minutes, we'll hear from two Vietnam veterans discussing their experience and from Washington State University journalism students who uncovered the nearly forgotten legacy of a World War I soldier. Northwest Public Radio's Sue Ann Ramella takes it from here.
On this Veterans Day, you might reflect on the sacrifices our men and women in the armed forces have made for our country. You might even go to a war memorial and look at the names inscribed in stone. But what if one of those names came to life for a moment? In a way, this happened to an archivist at Washington State University and two students. Senior Emery Dinman and junior Catherine Barner got to know a World War I soldier. Catherine, tell us about Logan Wheeler.
Well, Logan Wheeler was from Yakima. He was a WSU student in the 1910s, which was, at the time, Washington State College. He sold pots and pans to get through college, and he seemed to be very active in student life and was in ROTC.
And Emery, how did you, the both of you, come across a World War I veteran story?
Well, we were getting a tour of the WSU archives by Marco English. He's the university archivist. He showed us this incredible scrapbook and told us a story about how he was desperately looking for an old photo of the school bookstore from the turn of the 20th century. He was about to give up when he found this student's scrapbook, and in it were pictures of the steps of the first bookie. Marco English was thankful for the student and felt this kid did him a favor.
And in your piece, we hear how Mark felt after learning more about the student Logan Wheeler.
And it was one of these moments where it just, really struck a chord with me. This amazing kid that the day before came alive for me, and the next day, he's dead. He's been dead 100 years almost now, but choke up a little about it still today.
Later, Mark was flipping through another book in the archives and read, Logan Wheeler, Killed in France. 1918.
As Mark tells us this story, we're all struck by how we felt. We felt grief for a person we didn't know, and that's why we decided to do some digging.
So you two wanted to find out more about Logan Wheeler's life?
We wanted to know more about how he died and if he had any family.
Mark said he was always curious if Logan had family. He knew there was a girlfriend that he had married the day before he shipped out, but there was little else to go on.
All right, so I know from your research project that you guys learned a lot about his family and his time at WSU. Where else did this research take you?
We discovered many things about Logan. His family tree, the American Legion building named after him in Yakima. They had a lot of information that helped us out.
And we learned how he died in France and the great lengths his family had to go through just to find him.
Well, so for our listeners, Emery and Catherine's project on Logan Wheeler, the World War I soldier, is at nwpr.org, and they've collected photographs and made an audio piece. Catherine, after learning more about Logan Wheeler, and as a student yourself, how do you feel about Veterans Day?
I've always had strong feelings about Veterans Day just because I have a lot of ancestors who were in the military. I've been to countless military cemeteries like Arlington and Omaha Beach, but never really put a story or a lifeline to any of the names I saw on the gravestones.
And Emery, what lesson, if any, have you taken from the Logan Wheeler story?
Well, I feel that I too, and in fact most people, are guilty to some extent of passing by these honors for people long lost and not ascribing them with a personal reality. We don't give them the depth of the family that they left behind, of the loved ones that they left behind, and we don't honor their memory fully.
And the story of Logan Wheeler is at nwpr.org. Next, a conversation with two Vietnam War veterans from Moscow, Idaho, George Stockton, Army Special Forces, and Bob Wakefield, platoon leader, U.S. Marine Corps, were invited to share their story and talk about the Vietnam War documentary by Ken Burns and Lynn Novick. They joined Northwest Public Radio and Television in Colfax, and you're going to hear how different their experiences were coming home, about body counts, and the lessons they took from the war. The first question is if sharing their experience has been therapeutic. George Stockton answers first.
It has not always been that case. When I came back from Vietnam, got out of the Army, I went back to school at Oklahoma State. There were protests every day. But I was determined to get on with my life. So I didn't join in to those protests. Not only did I not participate, I didn't talk about being in Vietnam. I learned quickly that there was a stigma against Vietnam soldiers. I was taking a business psychology class at Oklahoma State. I had a professor, and this professor was talking about a friend of his that was a psychologist and said that all special forces are psychopaths. And that was the first time that I said anything. I stood up in the middle of the class and I said, "How can you say that? You're saying it secondhand. How can your friend say that about a group of men that he doesn't know? And obviously, there have been no studies that say that." And I proceeded to tell him that I had been Special Forces in Vietnam, knew many Special Forces, and I did not know one psychopath. So that was the first time that I ever spoke out. I wouldn't tell friends, but another Vietnam veteran, we could sit down and we could talk and laugh about things that went on. I had a good friend that was a social studies teacher at Deary High School, and he asked me to come out and talk to his class when they were studying the Vietnam War. I would go out and I would have 10 or 12 slides, and the students would ask me questions and I would talk. I did that for 8 straight years, and that helped a lot. Now, this documentary is one of the most in-depth studies I've ever seen. And Ken Burns, I thought, did a tremendous job by bringing out and showing how it was and not taking sides anyway. Because of that, it was intense. So it has brought back a lot of memories that I have buried. The 3 nights that we spent talking to a group such as you, and that has helped me get past some of those things that the Ken Burns documentary has brought back. So therapeutic in that way, yes.
How about you, Bob?
So my experience was very different from that. I spent another 20 years in the Marine Corps after I came back from Vietnam. So I was insulated in that kind of monk-like society that the Marine Corps is from the outside world. So me and my buddies, we talked openly about it. Now, maybe that's not quite accurate to say, because we talked about it from a tactical, kind of detached viewpoint. We didn't come out and say I was just scared out of my pants when this happened to me in the middle of the night or something like that, but we did talk about the war, but we didn't talk about it very much outside of our own little fraternity.
You said the word cathartic when we've talked about the Ken Burns documentary. Can you explain to them?
I wouldn't say it was therapeutic, because that implies that I needed some kind of therapy. I don't think I did. But it was cathartic. I will say that in 1998, I went back to Vietnam with a bunch of guys that had been in the Tet Offensive with me in 1968. And that was really cathartic, partly because we got to speak to some very high-ranking North Vietnamese officers and talk to them about their viewpoint on what had happened and the war. And that's another place where I agree completely that Ken Burns just did an outstanding job. He gave us the perspective of their commanders as well as some of the perspectives of our own commanders. And you can see right away what a difference there is between somebody who's talking about saving his country and somebody who's talking about body counts. You never heard a North Vietnamese talk about body counts. Wasn't important.
Okay, so just for our audiences who didn't grow up watching the news with the body count, can you explain
why that was so important for the military to have.
It was important because that was the only measuring stick that they had to say who is winning and who is losing this war. Time and time again, you saw on the news where they sent companies and platoons of soldiers to take a hill. They would spend days taking the hill, and they would kill so many North Vietnamese, and they would have so many Americans killed. They won if there were fewer Americans killed than there were North Vietnamese. Once they had taken that hill, they would leave, and the North Vietnamese would come right back. There was no gaining territory as there was in previous wars. So the only way they had of gauging and keeping score of who was winning was by how many were killed. Since that was what was showing who was winning, they didn't always care whether the bodies were North Vietnamese, Viet Cong, or civilians.
George, do you have first account about that padding?
One occasion, for sure. Across the river from our camp, it was a free fire zone, meaning anything that was over there was fair game. There was an incident where a mother and one of her sons brought their daughter. They had a small, in a small hamlet, and the daughter had been out tending the rice fields, and a helicopter gunship went over and strafed her. She was terribly wounded. They brought her across the river to our camp because we had an aid station in our camp. And we tried to save her, but she had lost too much blood. She was shot up too bad. She died. We turned a report in, one civilian KIA or killed. And by the time the report came back, we were told that that wasn't a civilian, it was a VC. We were credited with one VC killed.
This is a complicated thing that I think it's worth talking about. We had a group of people running the war who were business people and McNamara's bunch of bright young guys. They knew how to quantify how many cars you're selling, right? You go out and look at cars, you count them, and that's how many you sell. And they came up with the idea of counting the bodies. How stupid can that be? What's that going to tell us? And even look at it from your own personal standpoint. If you were to find out that your kid was in school and the school was going to measure his success by the number of pages of homework that he could do in a given night, well, pretty soon, what would happen? You didn't care what was on the page. You just wanted a number page. It was terrible. It was stupid. And it skewed us to such a point that things like what he said happened. And in my own case, in a province where I was, the people actually from McNamara's group came out and they were talking to us and interviewing us. And they said to me, they asked me, how pacified is this province? And I said, well, I'll be honest with you. It's 100% pacified during the day. And it's 0% pacified at night. So what do you suppose they said? It's 50% pacified. So does that make any sense to anybody here? No, of course not. It's crazy.
I just have one more question. So after you've served and reflecting in the documentary, what are some of your takeaways of your experience?
When I was a major, I was fortunate enough to have command of a battalion. Several years later, I was a lieutenant colonel. I got another battalion. I was completely different with that second battalion than I was with the first battalion. The one thing I would take away is I wish that I could go back again and be in the Marine Corps. Knowing what I know today about stuff, I would have done things very differently.
What would you have done differently?
Basically, in that first battalion, I wanted to do everything. What's the problem? I can fix it. When I got to the second battalion,
It was, how are you guys going to fix this? And that was the big difference between the two things.
Well, takeaway from Vietnam. One was that I had survived that year. From then on, after coming back from Vietnam, it was, don't sweat the small stuff. The rest of my life has been, don't sweat the small stuff. Because nothing can be worse than that. And the other thing is that I went over, I was 24 years old. I was invincible. When I came home, I realized I was not invincible. And you see that in young men. That's why young men are sent to war. But you see it every day. Young men, young women take chances the way they drive vehicles, the things that they do. Nothing's going to happen to them. They're invincible. I no longer had that invincibility when I came back.
The stories of local Vietnam veterans Bob Wakefield and George Stockton are two of six highlighted by Northwest Public Television surrounding the documentary film by Ken Burns and Lynn Novick. You can watch those videos at nwptv.org/Vietnam. For Northwest Public Radio and Television, I'm Scott Leadingham.